Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I am your host, Tim Dennis. Unfortunately, we do the show today under some sad circumstances. I'm happy to have my guest today, and I do have three of the best in the world of cryptozoology, three of the best researchers out there that sat under the learning tree of the person we're talking about today, which is Linda Godfrey. Linda launched the Beast of Bray Road, and that legend, and she is a legend in her own right, passed away at the age of 71 last week. The author, researcher, journalist wrote about the legend of the Beast of Bray Road in 1991 in Walworth County's weekly newspaper. And we're sad to say that we lost her too soon, as she had a lot of work that she put out there. She was very prolific, a lot of different books out there that we covered actually last week, her entire work out there, Hunting the American Werewolf, which we had her on this show quite a few times. One, to talk about Hunting the American Werewolf. We talked to her about the Beast of Bray Road. She contributed to Weird Wisconsin, Weird Michigan. American Monsters was one of the books that was out there. I Know What I Saw was another one of the books that was out there, and much, much more. On today's program, I wanted to remember Linda in a way that that only she could be remembered. And unfortunately, I didn't get to spend enough time with Linda to do that. But I wanted to remember her in a proper way. The only way to remember Linda in a proper way is to bring forth the people who worked with her the most, that knew her the most, that were right there in the trenches with her. And to do that, of course, you have to bring forth the people. Let's just say that we're right there with her, as I said, in the trenches. And those people are here with us tonight. Jay Bachochin, Lee Hample, and Sanjay Singhal are three of, like I said, the best researchers in cryptozoology, and they're here with us tonight. Guys, I'm just going to bring you in, and we'll just get started tonight rather than do the flowery introductions and just say, first of all, rest in peace, Linda. And I want to thank you three for being with us tonight. And just get into sharing the stories and the love that was Linda. I know I just will start with you, Jay. Want to get an idea of the lady first, and then we'll jump into the experiences from there. I want to ask you first, what was Linda like just as a person to get to know, and how did you first run into Linda and start to get into the interest, the mutual interest of cryptids?
Well, first, Tim, thanks for having all of us on, and thanks for doing this tribute to Linda. Without really going into the research part is how I met Linda, which was actually at a ghost conference in Chicago, and she was selling her books. But we actually were touching base with her because we were doing a documentary out in La Crosse called The Hidden Truth. Okay. And at that time is when I first got to know Linda's name and her the books she has written. But let's just jump right into how I remember her, though.
Yeah.
Besides that, okay, because we can skip over all that. I'd like to get to Linda the person, Linda the wife, Linda the mother, Linda the grandmother of her grandson, who's actually friends with my son. And without really getting too mushy, because I know we're going to get Sanjay in here as well as Lee, and we all know her that way. But she, to me, was that person that I could talk to, even if it wasn't cryptid related. And that, to me, is a really, truly a good friend. And so just being over, visiting over at her house, and just being able to talk about anything but a dog man or a Bigfoot, it was a treat, and I really, really enjoyed it. So with that being said, I could pass it along and let these other fine gentlemen tell you them about their experiences.
Yeah, let's go to Sanjay. Sanjay, tell me a little bit about your relationship with Linda and what she meant to you.
Okay, happy to. And Linda was a very, very dear friend and someone whom I respected and admired immensely. I first met Linda. She actually called me out of the clear blue sky in, I want to say it's the spring of 2014. I had had a dogman encounter on Bray Road, which had been really quite upsetting, and had written up the report and shared it. And it came across her desk and she called me and she said, "My name's Linda Godfrey. I'd love to meet you and talk to you." And we met for lunch in Burlington at a cafe, and that lunch turned into a 3-hour conversation about just about everything. And again, my relationship with Linda began, you know, in the cryptozoological realm, but it soon moved far beyond that. She was a very devout Lutheran, a very focused Christian. We had many conversations about our faith, about God. She was very loyal and devoted to her family and her close friends. And I spent a lot of time with her and her husband, Steve. I got to know her son, Nate, her son, Ben, and then her three grandsons, Marshall, Rory, and Callum. And she was very dedicated to her family and very focused on them. I also want to say Linda was one of the hardest working persons I've ever met. She could sit down at a desk and write a book literally in about an hour. When she was very self-disciplined, very organized, had notes going back decades, and could recall them at the drop of a hat. You know, if someone said there was a sighting in, you know, let's just say, you know, Amarillo, Texas, she would bring up every sighting in the area that she'd had a report on and could relate to it and talk about it. Wow. But not only that, she and my mother got on like a house on fire. Mm-hmm. And they were very good friends also. And one of the things I'd like to share tonight about Linda, and I shared this with her son Nate at the funeral. One of the last conversations I had with Linda was Mother's Day of this past year. And my own mother died last August in 2021. And Linda could not have been more kind. And the week of Mother's Day, she had called several times and I was very busy and my schedule was insane. And I couldn't understand why Linda was calling me. And, you know, we kept missing each other playing phone tag. And finally, I got in touch with her on Mother's Day of this year. And I said, "Linda, you know, is everything okay? I know you've been calling. Can I do anything to help you?" And she said, "No, I've been trying to talk to you." And she said, "I want you to know how, you know, the first Mother's Day without your mother is always extremely difficult. And I'm thinking of you and I'm praying for you." She said, "Your mother was a dear friend and I just want you to know how much she meant to me." Oh, wow. And it was one of the kindest things she had ever done. And I've never forgotten it. And sadly, it was one of the last conversations we ever had. Mm-hmm. And so I do treasure that memory very much.
Yeah, that is one to treasure. That's a great story, Sanjay. Lee, tell me a little bit about your relationship with Linda.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for this honoring of Linda, because her importance and instrumental to my life was phenomenal. I had been a math teacher and had no interest and probably total skeptic within the field when some of my neighbors, I purchased up 35 acres on Bowers Road by Bray Road in 2007. And then in 2013, some of my neighbors started telling me about the werewolf that lived back on my property. And I, you know, I was a total skeptic at that time. And so I started to do some experiments and with cameras and with a roadkill and things of this type. And I've been an outdoor person. I hunted and, quite a bit. I grew up on farms. And so I knew a lot about the outdoors. Well, this was totally different. There was occurrences that I had never heard of, seen in my field and on my cameras and stuff. And so I sought Linda out. They told me it was also called the Beast of Bray Road, my neighbors on Bowers Road there. So I looked up Google and and Linda's name popped up, and I, well, I'll contact her. She's a newspaper person, and so I'll see what, you know, what this is, you know. Well, I could not have had a better person to bring me from the world of what we'll call our normal 3D reality to a world of paranormal activity and paranormal consequences, because I met her at this probably a restaurant in Elkhorn in 2013, October 2013, and started showing her pictures. And here's this little lady, and her knowledge, her vast knowledge was, I'm looking at her and saying, oh, this is like a whole nother world. You took me through a doorway, and then you took me into a world larger than I'd ever anticipated. I cannot thank her enough for her being the person that God put into my life to contact her for her to have this experience or bring me along in this experience. And from 2013 on, we worked together very closely in many of the experiments out in my field. The book Monsters Among Us, I'm three chapters in that book. We worked together a lot on that book. She would write and then send it to me, and we would go over it together. And I met her at a house many times for, you know, to work together on that book. And on many of the nights that she was out at my farm, or I would have an unusual activity on my camera, I would text Linda, and 2-3 days later she would be there, and we would be, you know, conducting experiments and collecting data in my field. And mm-hmm. it's just for God to put her in my life and to bring me through that doorway, she was by far the best person that I could have encountered at that time. So thank you very much for this honor, Linda.
Absolutely, Lee. I'm curious, Lee, as you're telling Linda about some of these experiences that you've had with this creature, is she relating to you at the same time some of the experiences that she had? And is she normalizing some of these experiences for you, making it feel that, like, maybe you're not alone in this deal?
Oh, absolutely. She had some experiences up at her near when she lived north of Elkhorn, mm-hmm. and a woods there. So she had me, I went there, and there was a tree that had been basically picked up and thrown, and there was you know, where the bark had been, you know, looked like it had been grabbed. And, you know, so I'm 6'4", so I'm you know, showing I can reach this, you know, this handhold here and this handhold here, and, you know, and because they were far apart. And I said, yeah, the creature that threw this and grabbed at those locations had to be, you know, Lisa's taller than me. And she, you know, and so, yes, she did. Absolutely. She absolutely normalized it for me. And that's a really good word, because it was not a normal field for me to have the experiences that I've had and the data that I've collected in my field. Absolutely. That's a good word. Yes, she did.
How would you describe, Lee, in your own words, what Linda's presence was like when she would come around, when you'd start talking about, we could either call it the beast, Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it.
We call it, you know, the beast. Eventually got to be the beast, not a werewolf, but got to be called the beast. Yeah.
Okay. So, go ahead. So when we're talking about the beast, how would you describe her influence when it came to eventually dealing with this thing? Was it like straightening the rudder of a ship? Was it calming? Was it centering? How would you describe her influence overall when it came to changing her life?
Well, she never lost the in all the times we would look at occurrences where branches were broken or trees were broken off, or we could, is there another option here? Mm-hmm. She always really for a non, what I would say, a non-scientific person, because she was an artist and an excellent artist and, of course, an excellent literary talent. Mm-hmm. She still looked at every opportunity that could have existed, that could have caused this light or could have caused this deer to be carried, you know, 200 feet. And so she always was questioning. And I just found that so enjoyable for me, because I wanted those questions asked, and then we try to find the answers. And she approached it so straightforward and so down to earth. And so that made for me made it, yes, this is a down to earth scientific question, which is occurring in my field. So she just I don't know what word to use where she didn't like speculate very much. She wanted facts before she, you know, came to conclusions, and mm-hmm. and that was very rewarding for me.
Rewarding and assuring, would that be the word?
Assuring. Yes, assuring is a very good word. Yes. Okay. Very good.
Very fair, very fair. Well, one of the projects we're going to talk about as we talk about Linda's legacy here and how things move forward now as Linda's left us is a couple of movies that both Lee and Sanjay appear in, and that is movies that Jay has produced, Finding Jay and Finding Jay 2. And we'll talk about that a little bit later here in the show. One of the things that sound like, Lee, that you're bringing forward into the conversation is something that Jay mentions in both of those movies, and that is speaking about or finding your truth. And I want to bring this back to Jay, and that is, Jay, do you find that mantra that you've come forward with is maybe gleaned a little bit from Linda? Is that something that you learned from Linda directly?
You know, Linda was, as Lee mentioned, about, you know, finding the truth in searching for that, and to be able to find the answers that maybe we can't actually come up with. Mm-hmm. And that's where we can come to some of our conclusions. And that's what I did take a lot from Linda. Linda was my mentor in the beginning of this, because prior to anything cryptid, I was out chasing shadows and ghosts. Okay. You know, in different buildings. Mm-hmm. But so when I did meet Linda, and she took me under her wing with caution, obviously, because, you know, when you are somebody like Linda, mm-hmm. and I mean this with a smile, people are drawn to her because she is a wealth of knowledge, of information and understanding. So she did take me under her wing to be able to take me to some of her locations that actually contacted Linda. Linda is truly the hub of, I believe, the Dog Man, especially in Wisconsin, Michigan. She's the hub. So she would get these reports, just as Lee mentioned, you know, to be able to call her. She's an author. She understands that. So she was able to take me on these, you know, these journeys. And I was able to see her and how she worked. And that, honestly, that was the best part. You can read about it. I mean, you could read about what she wrote, but I was there to witness how she came to these conclusions, which is fascinating, which is actually not just taking it from the witness's statement. She would go to the area, mm-hmm. you know, and walk the paths of where these cryptids have been seen to look for any traces. But again, here's what she's doing. She is going out herself and she is finding her truth. She's hearing the stories, and then she's going out to be able to put, you know, to kind of put the two and two together. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's always been how I've been, you know, I started out trying to debunk ghost hunters and ghost adventurers, going out to, because that's TV,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I was always going out to hunt the truth. But Linda really showed you don't just take a story for what it's worth. You go out and you investigate it and peel that onion, and then come to your conclusion. And honestly, it might be a different conclusion than what you'd expect Tim or Sanjay or Lee or even myself, right? It's basically finding your truth, what your understanding is. And honestly, that's my approach to all this now. It's never been, and I believe just like Linda, never been about trying to prove it. Tell the stories. Let the reader come to their conclusion. In my case with a documentary, let the viewer come to their own conclusion. But bottom line is, if you want to find that truth, you have to be out. You have to go out and seek your truth. That's my bottom line.
Right.
You have to go out and seek your truth.
Right. You brought up an interesting memory. It just hit me now. I remember back in 2006, we were going to book Linda onto the show. And I remember we were a pretty new podcast at the time, radio show / podcast. Podcasts were kind of an add-on to your radio show at the time. And we went to contact Linda and ask her to be on. We wanted to talk about her latest book. And we got hit with that dose of skepticism that you would get from a journalist at that time. And it was kind of like, and why do you want me on your show again? And I think we got more questions than we actually threw at her on the show. But it was more of a sense of, and you put it perfectly, I think, Jay, it was that sense of, okay, I want to protect my work. But more than that, I don't want you to paint me as the village kook, you know, because of this, the subject that I am, you know, I am looking at here, the subject that I am into here. It'd be very easy for you to try and spin this on me. It'd be very easy to take my research that I've worked very hard on, this research that I've spent a lot of hours on to put a skeptical eye on, and for you to try and flip this on me and make me look ridiculous. So I want to know that you treat this just as seriously as I treat it. And we were trying to explain to her that, you know, this isn't something where we're going to have you on and have a bunch of laughs with. And then we remembered, oh, yeah, the day before we're doing Supernatural News, where we have a bunch of fun with Supernatural News, and we're doing a bunch of ha-ha and comedy, and we're still trying to convince her we're going to be serious with her material. So we had, I think, a little bit of a tough time at first getting her booked, but she realized, okay, yeah, we have a sense of humor to our show, but we also treat things with respect as well, because she heard a couple of our guests that had been on and realized they were of greater stature. So she agreed to come on the program. We had a very nice time, and we were very serious with her topic. And then she realized, okay, I had nothing to worry about. But it was one of those things where she really looked at us like, are you really worthy of the subject? One, are you going to treat the subject with respect? Two, and pardon my language here, guys, are you going to shit all over me and my reputation? Three, you know, I mean, it's, you know, she was very protective of the subject and the work and everything else, which I got to respect. I respected from the beginning, because I think one of the things that, especially in this field, when you really take the research seriously, when you really are out there doing the work and you're out there putting in time, your own money, resources, it's real easy for some goof like me with a podcast to come out there and just start slinging words out there and trying to run you through the mud. And it can be very damaging to the work you're doing. Agreed?
Oh, I mean, for me, that's how I say it. Before I met Sanjay, and we can go into that story a little bit later. But before then, people would say, okay, Jay, You're investigating ghosts. Now you're in the woods. Jay, what are you looking for? I would never say the word Bigfoot. Bigfoot is the butt end of a joke. I mean, you could say the same thing about Dogman or Werewolf. I mean, even Dogman sounds like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that, which is weird. And you have your upright canines. But the thing is, with that, like you were saying, people will look at that and you will get you will get ridiculed for it, because, you know, Bigfoot's the butt end of a joke. So I would just say, I'm looking for a woods beast out here. Mm-hmm. Never said Dogman, never said Werewolf, never said Bigfoot, never said Sasquatch, because of the dogma of speaking about the subject. But with that, I totally understand it. And, you know, and I definitely can see Linda already questioning you. That's why I was kind of smiling.
Yeah.
You know, back here And I'm sure we all were here because we all knew how Linda was.
Yeah. So let me ask, you know, I'm going to throw this at Sanjay. Is there a, and we'll throw this question out there, and it seems like kind of a weird one, but when we throw this question out, we'll take our break afterwards. Is there a hierarchy to what sounds, you know, as far as this whole media thing goes, what sounds craziest when you guys get together to do these media appearances? What's the craziest? Is it Bigfoot? Is it the Beast of Bray Road? Or is it a dog man or a werewolf? Does this all sound crazy, or is there a hierarchy to it? What sounds more sane than the other?
Well, I'll tell you, Tim, I have my own answer, and Jay and Lee can actually back me up on this one because they've witnessed it in person. When it comes to the paranormal, I've experienced an incredible number of encounters here at the cottage where I live, out in the woods with Linda, with Jay, with Lee, with, you know, a number of other persons. And to this day, the strangest phenomenon I've ever experienced, the craziest one that people will look at me and say, are you out of your flipping mind? But Jay's videotaped this. I cast shadows against the sun.
Really?
Yes. On a dark, cloudy night with no moon, I will cast a shadow. Clear, absolutely clear and dark and black.
And I'll interject there and say 100% fact. I'm there. I have it recorded. I didn't mean to butt in, Sanjay.
No,
but no, it's okay.
You're 100% right. And I never understood it. And that's why I continue to like to hike with you at night, because you truly are a magnet.
Shadows. And I've been out, Tim, with other persons on cloudy, dark, overcast nights and cast shadows that are absolutely clear and distinct against the ground.
Really?
Yes. Jay and I were out once a few years ago, and the sun was setting directly to the west. The trail was leading into the sun, direct due west. And I was walking west towards the sun and casting a shadow towards the sun.
How does that happen, Sanjay?
I have absolutely no idea, but I will tell you the answer that I have come to.
Okay.
And that is, anytime I go into the woods, or anytime, in fact, I leave my house, I ask God to protect me. And I firmly believe that it is His light shining upon me and keeping me safe.
It's a good answer. Very good. So do you have a rank or hierarchy of strangeness as to what, which one of these beasts sounds like they're credible and which one isn't, or do we just say we throw them all in the same pot?
I think we throw them my own opinion is we throw them all in the same pot. Other people may have a different answer. I you know, when it comes to strange, well, but let me put it this way, Tim. Mm-hmm. The most experiences I've had have been with Bigfoot or Bigfoot type creatures.
Okay.
Second to that, I would say with ghosts or just spiritual type beings. Mm-hmm. And then down the hill from there, we have the dog man and other wacky, strange, bizarre things. And there's been alien encounters not too far from Lee's farm with some very strange looking creatures. We're talking headless aliens. We're talking, you know, all of that stuff. I don't know where to rank those in terms of, you know, percentage of encounters. Those would come more towards the bottom, which is probably a good thing. But again, that's my own answer. Other people may have a different hierarchy.
Okay, before we go to break, you brought up something there, Sanjay, that I got to ask Lee. Lee, you know, we've had guests on this program before who have tried to tie together an alien Bigfoot connection. Now, Sanjay just mentioned that you've had alien activity on your farm.
Oh, no. Tim, forgive me if that was what I said no. That's
what no. But follow me here, Sanjay. Follow me, because I'm not done with the question.
Okay.
I want to know from Lee. Now, you've had alien activity on your farm, but has it ever been followed up with activity by the beast? Have you ever seen an alien, and then shortly afterwards had beast activity on your farm?
I mean, Tim. Okay, I have over 100,000 pictures on my computer, and most of them have paranormal, supernatural type of images on them. In my 35-acre farm, I mean, I have tracks of 5 toads, 7 pads. That there's no animal in the world exists without tracks. I've seen hundreds of times. I have a fist type track. I have images in my camera where the image is transforming from a mist to a full blown three-dimensional image. I have images with the dog band in the picture, and I have UFOs in the background.
Okay.
So, and I have orbs. I have pictures of orbs, videos, and light shafts, and they're all within my 35 acres. Now, I don't know much about Bigfoot. I've never done any research with Bigfoot. I've totally focused on my farm, which has been, I've never seen any Bigfoot tracks.
Okay.
I've seen other type of tracks, but I mean, yeah, there's a strong connection on my farm, certainly in a geographic concept, between the dog man and aliens. I have pictures of aliens too. That one picture that I have, it looks like just the legs and the body. I don't see a head on it, but, so I have, many pictures of UFOs and of the dog man. So,
wow.
I think there's a strong connection, and I'll be tracking in my property in snow. I'll be tracking, and all of a sudden the tracks just stop. I mean, there's no more snow tracks. It's 3-4 inches of snow, and the tracks will just stop, or the tracks will just start. I'll be walking in my field or snowmobiling, and all of a sudden there'll be it looks like it landed on 2 feet and walked away. So I see a strong connection between, if that's your question, a strong connection between Bigfoot, aliens, and UFOs.
Very interesting indeed. I'll tell you what, we'll take our break here. When we come back, we'll get some stories from you guys, stories of expeditions out there in the field with Linda. How about that? We'll do that when we come back. Our guests are Lee Hample, Sanjay Singhal, and Jay Pachochin, three guys who have spent quite a bit of time with Linda Godfrey out there in the field, not only just with the Beast of Bray Road, but Bigfoot and all kinds of things unexplained out there in the forest, you may say. All kinds of things, Tim. Yes, it's more than just things that may walk on 2 or 4 legs. We'll explain when we come back. By the way, we'll also be talking about two movies that Jay has produced and are out there right now. Finding Jay and Finding Jay 2 are out there right now. They're on Amazon Prime, or Prime Video as it's known now. Be sure to check them out. I've checked out both of them. Very good movies indeed. And just about anybody who's out there in the cryptozoological field is in both these movies. I'm telling you, there's some interesting stuff and interesting evidence. We're going to talk about some of that evidence here in the second half of the program. So when we come back, more with these three gentlemen. We'll also talk about some of their adventures with Linda Godfrey when we come back here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. We're paying tribute tonight to Linda Godfrey, who passed away last week, unfortunately. And, of course, Linda Godfrey, best known as the author, researcher, and journalist who discovered the Beast of Bray Road in Kettle Moraine there in Wisconsin. We've got Jay Bachochin, Lee Hample, and Sanjay Singhal with us tonight, and we are talking about all things Linda Godfrey. Gentlemen, I promised it before the break. Let's talk a little bit about some of the exploits with Linda and being out there in the field. I know we talked a little bit before the show about some of those exploits with Linda, and I want to share some of the favorite stories there. Now, Jay, in the movie Finding Jay, there's an interesting story, and I think we can share it here. We're not tipping off too much about the movie if we talk about it. You and Linda were out in the field, out in the woods of Kettle Moraine, and you know, one of the things about Bigfoot himself is that they tend to bend trees a lot. What they're doing this for is, for one thing or another, speculation, and I'll let you talk about why you think they do this. But I'll let you take over the story from there. You got a heck of a knot on your head, my friend, and I'll let you take over from there and explain how it happened, and it happened in Linda's presence.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
And it's actually one of my fondest memories, because some of it's a little bit humorous as we go on here. But this was one time that Linda and I were walking out in the Kettle Moraine. Beautiful. It was actually a beautiful day, almost too nice is the way you would phrase it, because it wasn't dark. You know, there was nothing eerie about it. We were just going on a hike. And of course, I was always bringing my big old clunky video tape recorder, because I document everything. If it's not out in the woods, it's my kids. It's my kids telling me to put my phone down. I document everything. So Linda and I are walking out there, and Linda goes, it's a little quiet, too quiet. You know, she goes, I'm going to try something. I'm going to step off the path here. And she found this like little sapling, you know, probably 12 foot tall sapling, kind of small. And she goes, I'm going to do what the great apes do by shaking a tree, because this will show maybe dominance, or just to bring something up. Mm-hmm. And so she goes out there, and I'm actually recording her at this point, and she's shaking the tree pretty good, and nothing really happens. She comes out and she goes, why don't you try it? You know, you're bigger and stronger. And, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to this little tree. And I actually put the video camera down at the time, so that part wasn't recorded. But I walk out to this 12-foot sapling, and I put both hands around it. I had a baseball cap on. I took my sunglasses, put it on top of the bill there. And just in case, like, little branches were going to fall. This was in September, so everything was still very much alive. And I go and shake this tree, and I shake it violently. If you want to talk about Zach Bagans cursing the ghost, mm-hmm. I was becoming this great ape, you know, with the sound, the roar, everything. But as I'm shaking it violently, my glasses fall off my head. I'm actually looking down still, and I'm still shaking. I'm looking at my glasses, and I notice a little pine cone, but right where my glasses fell, and I stop. But I stop because I felt this like pain on the left side of my head, and Linda's on the right side on the path. So on the left side is actually facing a little meadow, mm-hmm. and more woods, more tree line and more woods. And it really kind of intrigued me, because I thought, wow, I knocked a pine cone off this tree, which was not a pine sapling, but I didn't put that one together yet. I'm like, ow, that pine cone really hurt. And I went down and picked up the pine cone, but it was like last year's pine cone. It weighed nothing.
Really?
And so I'm kind of walking up. Linda walks up to me, and I go, this is weird. I don't know if a pine cone or a coconut fell on my head. And she was like, a coconut from Gilligan's Island, like shaking a coconut tree. And it fell. And she did. She couldn't stop laughing. I'm actually hurting, and she's laughing, which is kind of humorous in itself. But I did. I took my cap off, and on the left side of my head, I actually had a bump from an impact of something. Now, it was a very high woods floor. So again, this would go to Linda being a mentor, because I was still kind of new to this. Mm-hmm. And she said, ooh, you could have gotten pegged with a rock. And I'm like, by what? She goes, by the thing that we were, you know, making the sound for to come out, a Bigfoot. And I'm thinking, wait, Bigfoot throws rocks? Again, I was kind of new into this. So she's kind of teaching me of what that is. And that bump on my head wasn't just kind of a funny coconut story. It actually hurt. And at this point, Linda said, why don't we leave? And this is in my documentary, the first one, Finding Jay. Mm-hmm. And on my way home, or not on my way home, I'm going to drop off Linda at her residence. And I've been to her house plenty of times. I know it back and forth. I could drive in there blindfolded. Mm-hmm. I dropped her off, said goodbye. It was all fine. It was still during the day. And on my way back, leaving her subdivision, I didn't know where I was. This was really scary because I knew my name was Jay. I know I'm in my Ford Escape and I know I'm driving from Linda's, but wait, how do you get out of here now? And I've been out of there hundreds of times, exaggerating, you know, many, 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 many times. I knew how to get out of there. And I was like, okay, well, wait. I put my GPS on my Garmin back in the day.
Yep.
And I popped that in and it said no service because it was bad service there. So now I'm panicking. That was just going to show. And again, I told Linda this later and Sanjay that week that I had to have had a small concussion by an impact, by something that was thrown out by me being super aggressive. And let me just tell you right now, I've never shaken a tree or scream like an ape like that sense. Well, maybe one time with Sanjay in it, he could tell that story.
Okay.
But I kind of stay away from that. But that is one of my fondest memory is of her laughing at me about the coconut thing. Mm-hmm. But it really happened. And she told me later you'll see it in the documentary, and I never knew this because she talked to one of her Native American friends that said, if that rock hit me, it was meant to kill me. Oh, and I've never heard that before. I've never experienced that part before. So it was, definitely intriguing. You know, it was a close encounter with the fifth guy.
That's chilling. You know, Jay, when I saw that in the documentary, I could only relate it to one other experience I've had. And that is I've had multiple concussions, and I had for a while post-concussive syndrome. And I remember trying to go to work one day and driving completely past the building and going 30 miles south from where the building was. And I remember ending up on the side of the road near a cornfield, not knowing where I was, who I was, looking at my driver's license and just hitting a button that said home on my phone and hoping somebody would answer. And crying and saying, I don't know where I am and I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
That was the scariest moment I'd ever had in my life. And I felt for you in that moment because I knew that panic that of driving out and going, I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, it was definitely very real.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, okay, the velocity that rock had to be thrown at in order for you to be concussed like that. I mean, it had to be going a good, between 60 and 80 miles an hour, at least, if not more?
I don't know. And again, that was during my ranting of my silverback gorilla sounds. And I'm telling you, I was playing the part of a silverback gorilla. So I was roaring and shaking. So when the impact happened, and that's just it. It's like, I'm trying to figure out when the impact happened. I remember my sunglasses came off, and maybe you're right. Maybe I was pegged that hard when my sunglasses popped off. I don't know. All I know is it was all after the fact of feeling that lump.
It had to be going the speed of a major league pitch in order to do that.
Yeah. And I don't know how big it was. I mean, this could have been pebble size. I don't know, like Linda and I, it was such a high forest floor. It would have been like trying to find a needle in a haystack out there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Sanjay, I know before the show we were talking about, you had an interesting experience. It's not necessarily a Bigfoot experience, but you had an interesting experience. I want you to retell that story here on the show. Again, this isn't necessarily limited to Bigfoot or Beast of Bray Road or anything like that. If you would tell us that story, please.
Oh, I'd be happy to, Tim. And what's really great about that story is I believe it was one of the first, I think it was the first time I met Lee, or one of the first times I had met Lee.
And, August 2015.
Yeah, August 12th. And so, 2015, Tim, Linda and Lee had decided to do a night investigation at Lee's farm. And had invited me to join them. And I had picked up Linda from her house, and we'd driven out to Lee's. And we drove out into the middle of the field. And it was quite late. The stars were out. It was absolutely beautiful, a gorgeous, clear, starry night. And I was parked at the edge of the field facing northwest. I was obviously in the driver's seat. Lee was in the passenger seat next to me, and Linda was behind us. And all around us, we could see planes every so often. There is a nearby airfield. I don't remember. Is that Elkhorn or it wasn't Milwaukee, but it's the other nearby airfield, Lee.
The closest one is at Burlington.
Okay, maybe it was Burlington. And of course, it was the night of the Pleiades. So we were also hoping for some shooting stars. And I just remembered now too, Lee, and you'll remember this. I decided to see what would happen if I called in an alien, and I took Lee's 20,000 watt torch, plugged it in, and blinked it out the window three times. And about 5 minutes later, maybe this far to the northwest over the trees, this very large round white light popped up. And started was behaving somewhat erratically. It seemed like it was swinging back and forth. And I remember Linda saying almost immediately, "That's not an airplane." And I think all three of us realized it was the light was behaving very oddly. And all of a sudden, as we were watching this, this light started coming directly towards us in a clear, straight line of travel directly to the car. And as it got closer, it wasn't coming fast. It was a good, steady velocity. I noticed that every so often this cone of light would shine down from it onto the ground, almost as though it was searching for something. And then as it got closer, and we discussed this later, of course, both Lee and Linda observed it differently than I did. I observed it as a single white light. Lee and Linda observed it as two bright white lights, one above the other. And as it got closer and closer, I remember thinking, if that gets over the car, we're all going to be in a Travis Walton episode, and I'm not sure I want to have to do that. So I took the torch again from Lee, plugged it in, and I directed it out the window of my car right at this light. And Lee said it best, the light stopped and sort of shuddered or hesitated, and then it blinked out.
Wow.
And almost immediately, I had this overwhelming urge to jump out of the car and run into the brush nearby. And I had this strong impression that something was waiting for me there. But then I also realized, if I get out of this car and I run into that brush, I won't come back. And I then started to, I do remember this now, I started to get very frightened, and I seemed to think I had some physical nausea or dizziness. And I remember saying to Lee and to Linda, "We need to get out of here, and we're leaving now." And since it was my car, I could do that. and it was right at that moment that someone said, I think Lee said, "Well, we should have taken a picture of it." And Linda said, "I was just about to do that." And then it disappeared. But wow. that was an electrifying experience, and I have never forgotten it.
Wow. 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 And Lee, you had said something about...
Go ahead.
Oh, you'd said something about it. You had had, 2 to 3 minutes or something like that where this thing was hovering?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, first of all,
the way the forcefulness with what Sanjay said was, we need to leave now. You know, we leave. I can't even do it. But it was like, there's no question here. We're leaving. I think if I would have been in my car, he'd have been driving it and we would have been leaving. But yeah, then I said to Linda, I said, we should have taken pictures. And Linda said, well, I was just getting ready. But I said, Linda, you had, you know, easily two, three, 4 minutes that's coming across the field. So we were just mesmerized, though, with this light source or orb of light or UFO coming across the field, probably 30 to 50 feet off the ground. And when Sanjay used the spotlight on it, and it was probably, I would say, 50 feet away and 30, 40 feet above the ground. So it was very close to us. And I've always wondered, did Sanjay save us, or would we have had a different experience? So would, you know, maybe we wouldn't be talking to you now. So yeah. I think maybe Sanjay saved us, because when he shined the spotlight on it, it just hesitated, shuddered, and disappeared. And you know, of course, Linda was there with us, and just a experience with Linda that Sanjay that I'll never forget. Absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember, Sanjay, what was the internal instinct that told you take that spotlight and shine it at that thing? Or was it just instinct?
I think it was instinct, but I also think it was fear, because there was no question with any of us that it was coming straight for us. And I mean, we all watched this coming across the field directly to the car. And at first, you know, I think my own response was, wow, look at this. Oh my God, here's a UFO and it's coming right for us, which changed to, wow, oh my God, there's a UFO and it's coming right for us. And I honestly think part of that reaction was fear, because I thought, if that gets over the car, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I did not. So I thought, well, let's shine a light at it and see what it does. See if that will, because I think, you know, in most, you know, cases you hear of UFO encounters, there's no response made from the human. The UFO shows up, does its thing, and moves on. And I thought, well, what would happen if we responded and said, well, you've got a big bright light, here's our big bright light.
Right. Yeah.
And the other thing was too, you know, do you remember? I think the motor was running. I don't think I'd switched off the motor.
I think you started it. We were sitting there for probably what, a half hour before, you know, looking at the stars, because it was a beautiful, beautiful night. So yeah. I think the motor was off. I think yours was.
Yeah. Okay. And I think, Tim, part of that too was I was very concerned that the car would not start.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, hear of electrical failures with motors when a UFO in a UFO sighting or encounter.
Yeah.
Yep. And we were quite a ways into the field, and it wasn't just getting back to the barn, but just, you know, getting us back to safety. You know.
Yeah, very much so. Jay, there's something interesting. I don't remember if it's in Finding Jay or Finding Jay 2. You're out in the middle of Kettle Moraine and you're having, I think it's either an experience with wood knocks or you're having something happening where you think there's something out there. And all of a sudden you have a glowing light that goes by in front of whatever it is you're experiencing out in the woods. Not quite the size of what it sounds like Sanjay and Lee saw that night, but it is it seemed like it was bigger in person than what was seen on the body cam, and it was attributed to something they call the will-o'-the-wisp, which is quite common in Wisconsin. But do we draw that parallel between UFO, alien, and will-o'-the-wisp, or do we draw a line clearly between the two and call them two different type of phenomena?
Well, it all depends on what truth you want to believe. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that.
Sure.
I put them all together. It's the environment out there, whether it's a Bigfoot, whether it's a dog man, or different cryptids, lights, time shifts, time loss. There are a lot of very odd phenomenon out in the Kettle Moraine.
Yes, there are.
and I was going to say, Sanjay would be the first one to know. See, not only do I call him the magnet, because whenever Sanjay and I would go out hiking, mm-hmm. there was something odd that would happen. And again, it's always, honestly, it's still inconclusive because we didn't see certain things. For instance, we were getting pelted with rocks. And Sanjay, you could tell that story in a minute, but you know, we didn't see what was throwing it. But again, we go with possibility or plausibility, and you would have to be out there to really understand that people are going to tell you it's just somebody messing with you. If you knew the terrain that was out there to try to keep up with you on a path, number one, it'd be incredibly difficult for a person to do. You'd be able to hear them.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just something moving silently, just eyeballing us, trying to peg us with rocks. But it's also when we're going out at night. You brought up these orbs of light. In my second film, I actually capture on thermal what I believe is a Bigfoot peeking around a tree we heard a very odd owl call. Mm-hmm. That sounded like an owl, but it sounded like a person making an owl call.
Right.
So therefore, it didn't sound like your typical barred owl or any type of owl I've ever heard of. And to be able to capture on thermal, and right after it peaks away, we get this orb of light that just kind of arcs right from that area, right in front of us, not behind the trees, to be mistaken by the horizon or something in the sky in the background. This was in front of us, and you see these lights kind of go right by, and as soon as the orb of light disappears, you hear a loud crash through the woods. So right now, you know, you're talking about wanting to be ridiculed. I'm saying I caught something on thermal that was solid. Now I saw an orb of light that could be whatever, that could be whatever type of energy. And then I hear a loud crash, which I would believe would have to be solid again. Mm-hmm. So in Jay's weird mind, I'm like, did this Bigfoot just turn into a ball of light to evade us and become whole again into a physical form to start breaking through the trees again? Now, did I see that happen? Absolutely not. But I'm trying to put the correlation or the connection of these lights together. I mean, you know, people have gone as far as saying, is it extraterrestrial? I don't know. Are these beings, are these Bigfoot or cryptids, flesh and blood? Yes, they are. Do they hold other different special attributes that are associated with the orbs of light or the will of the wisp that Sanjay and I have seen plenty of while we're out there? You just stand out there and you see these things.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Right. Yeah. And there's been many times where Sanjay would say, he's seeing lights, and I don't like to just agree with people if I don't see them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't see them. Well, holy cow, there's one now, you know,
yeah.
Just like that. Yeah. with Sanjay. So long story longer, I think that there is a connection between all of this with a flesh and blood, but with the environment around it. I mean, this is Wisconsin. You've got your effigy mounds, the Native American burials, which could lead into ghosts, whatever those could be. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. you know, there's so many different possibilities, but that's really why I'm going out, not to try to prove it. I am just trying to validate that for myself.
Understandable. I'm going to ask you the weirdest question here. I'm going to throw Sanjay in the middle of it. If you've got, and actually I may throw it Sanjay's way. Sanjay, I understand there's the protection of God there with you, but why the magnet thing, man? If you've got the protection of God around you, why are so many things popping up to say hello to you?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Tim, and I'm not sure that I have a complete answer. But I will say this, when I first started doing paranormal investigations and research, I would go into an environment or a room or a house with a very open mind, mm-hmm. and say, something's happening here. I want to know what it is, or try to understand what it is. And so part of that outlook is, okay, if there's something out here, let's make ourselves available to it. So I've always had this attitude of openness, perhaps, or receptiveness to whatever's there. And I think in response to that attitude, things show up and make themselves visible or felt or heard. In a lot of cases, visible, and just sort of follow me around, or just walk in, you know. And Jay and Lee can both tell you this, every single time we've gone out investigating together, not even getting out of the car, I have said to Jay.
Yeah, I was going to say, go ahead.
And I would say to him, Jay, there's something out there. And I think part of this too, Tim, in terms of perception of what's out there, is my professional training is as an architect, okay. and an artist. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trained professionally to look at things and to look into things and the arrangements of things. So I'm always watching and always observing what's around me. And that perception it allows me to experience things that might other people may not necessarily comprehend. Jay and I have been out in the woods numerous times, and also with Linda, where, you know, we'll literally pull up, you know, to a site to investigate it, and getting out of the car, I will say, I don't think we're alone. I think we're being watched. And there was one episode at a site that I refer to as Mansfield Park. That's the code name for it, of course. I don't give the real location.
Yep.
And Jay and Linda and I have been there. And Linda and I went on one occasion, and getting out of the car, I said, Linda, we're being watched. There's something here. We're being followed. And Linda is very no-nonsense, and she said, okay, you know, document that, record it, you know, keep, you know, right, document that out. And as we got further into the woods, I began to experience what many people refer to as being zapped, where all of a sudden I felt extremely dizzy, a horrible pounding, like something was pounding a mallet on both sides of my head. I was disoriented, stumbling. I almost couldn't see. And it was getting quite dark. And I said, and Linda said, we should probably get back to the car. Now, this is the humorous side of Linda, okay. which I absolutely treasure. One of my favorite stories. Linda, as you know, was a very petite lady. Mm-hmm. And I'm 6'2" and quite a large frame. And I realized if I fell, there was no way Linda was going to be able to drag me back to the car. And at one point, I almost said to her, take the keys and go. Mm-hmm. Go get help. And Linda said, Sanjay, if I do that, you won't be here when I get back. And then she said to me, Linda had this very direct look that she could, you know, it was, and, you know, this little petite lady could scare the living daylights out of you with that look. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and she said, Sanjay, yes, Linda, don't fall down. Yes, Linda, because I can't carry you back to the car. So we got back to the car, and less than 10 yards in front of the car was an enormous footprint that had not been there when we arrived. And I said, Linda, see, I told you we were being followed. I told you we were being followed. And Linda's response was, you know, yes, you did. So let's measure it and document it and get out of here. So we did. But I don't, it's been a curious it's a curious experience. It's a curious quality. I'm grateful for it most of the time, but there have been moments where I really wish I didn't see all the things that I've seen.
Understandable. Understandable. Lee, I haven't forgot about you, brother. Don't fall asleep on me.
All very, very interesting. I've been enjoying the story.
I hear you. Just no figured I'd sound an alarm for you. Give me one of your favorite stories, one of your best stories of investigating with Linda.
With Linda?
Yeah.
Of course, that one with Sanjay was very...
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Was very good. Very good. But... I'd say it was probably 2015, in the summer, I put out roadkill deer, and I put out 20 of them, and there's a story about every one of them, and 19 of them were carried away. But this particular one I'd put out, it only been out for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to check on it. I had cameras on it. I mean, I should have dozens and dozens and dozens of pictures of what carries the deer away, but I don't. The cameras would quit working or a mist would come. But this particular one, I went out there and the deer was gone. Now, it was late. I think it was June. I'm sorry. It was June because the hay was probably three feet tall. And I could see where the deer had been. That's a 150-pound deer was carried out into the field. And then there was probably 75, 100 feet. You see the trail. And then there was an area of 10 feet by 10 feet where all the grass had been knocked down. Hmm. And you could see where four pods had actually landed. So I carefully left there and called Linda. I said, Linda, come over here. And she was very responsive. And so she's over there. She drives back there. She comes back to the back part of the field and we're looking at this area and taking pictures of it and documenting it and seeing if there's any tracks or any trail leaving this 10-foot by 10-foot area would have been absolutely been disturbed. And there weren't any. But in that process, we looked over at my neighbor's field and there was a large, I mean, I don't know what it was. I called it a humpback raccoon, but it was huge and it was crossing the field. And Linda, look at that. Linda, look at that. And I had my ATV and I said, I'm going to go over. I'm going to chase that thing down to see what that is, because that's a huge, you know, if that's a raccoon and got this humpback thing, I don't know what that is. And Linda looks at me and she said, you're not leaving me. I go, oh, okay, no, you're not leaving me. I'm not staying here alone. So we attempted to take some pictures, but it was far away. But that was Linda's. she had a look and a look of this is could be quite dangerous. So
yeah.
So we continued with the process of taking pictures of the disturbed area and the creature, whatever it was. I mean, it was very large and it had this hump back to it. It was, but we watched it go across my neighbor's field. So
wow.
Linda said, you're not leaving me. Oh.
I don't blame her. Yeah. This
little petite lady had, yeah, like Sanjay said, she was powerful. She was extremely powerful, her knowledge was just off the charts. So
absolutely, I suppose for as brave as she was, she didn't want to take on a beast one on one.
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. We didn't know what was on the other side of us. So
exactly. Yeah, exactly. So let me. As we start to wrap up here, guys, let me ask you this question, and that would be this: we start to move forward here in and by the way, folks, I want to remind you before we do leave you today that once again that Finding Jay and Finding Jay 2 are available on Prime Video. We've referenced it throughout the program, but we want you to check it out. I got to check it out here in the last couple of days. And by the way, good stuff, Jay. I got to tell you that some excellent evidence on all the different phenomena that's going on there in the Kettle Moraine area of Wisconsin.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. So just when you're looking it up, it's Finding Jay, and then the second one is called Beyond the Kettle, Finding Jay too. So if you're going to do a search, but I believe either one would do, but I appreciate any support, and I appreciate you watching them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I threw you a couple bucks, my brother. I rented Finding J2, and actually I just put Finding J2 and it came right up. So
it did.
Yeah,
well, you know what, I got that, and I'm gonna head to Hawaii tomorrow morning.
Oh, on that couple of bucks that I threw in?
On that couple of bucks, I'm going to stretch it.
I don't have that own Finding J2 money, but I got that rental money. So I threw that rental money at you. So
all right. There you go. No, I appreciate it.
So it's just between you and me, bro. So I want to remind you, Prime Video, you can actually, it's free for the first one. They get you hooked on that. Then you go get the second one. You get the rental on that one or buy it. I would actually recommend buying it because the second one is, first of all, you got cameos galore in that second one. And compelling evidence. So I would just go straight for the buy. I wouldn't even bother renting it.
And I appreciate that. And don't forget, I also sell the Blu-rays on my website as well. So
that's right.
Yeah. Just in case ever your streaming goes down, you still have a copy at home.
I'll tell you what, we'll throw up the link to the Blu-ray on the description of this show. So you can just go get the Blu-ray. You can skip the Amazon Prime thing. Yeah. So if you don't have a Prime membership, you can just go get the Blu-ray for yourself.
You know, and honestly, Tim, it's never been about the money that they would say about the fame, the fortune. It's not about that. It's about the truth. Honestly, I appreciate anybody's support with anything, but really it's what's going out there. And in the first film, you get to see Sanjay firsthand marvel at these rocks coming at him, while I got beamed with a rock a week before, turn around and I'm like, I don't want any part of this. I don't have a hard hat. I don't have a goalie mask on. And Sanjay was just taking the brunt of just amazement, which is good. But it's also like Lee, you know, being in Lee in the second and Beyond the Kettle, Finding J2, where going to Lee's property has its, the vibe I get is, you know, you could say scared, or, you know, monstrous or anything like that. There is just a very odd, unsettling vibe. And I give Lee all the credit in the world for going out and farming that hay out there, Lee. I give that all to you, man.
Then my tractor's quit running. Then I got to wait for a while. So,
well, Lee, after all this time out there on the property, has the way you feel towards the property changed, or is it one of those things where, you know what, I've been here for so long and I'm not going anywhere? Do you eventually develop a callus about it, or do you?
Well, I have to bale the hay. I have to make hay because I live actually in Northern Illinois, and we have horses and sheep and goats and cattle here, so I got to make the hay.
Okay.
And in that process, of course, I'm in the field, you know, quite a bit in the summer during the daytime. But there's been, like to say, my tractors have quit running, and there's been unusual activity. But all my neighbors have seen it. It's I can stand in my yard and point to five farms that you can see, and they've all seen it over the years. So it's just part of that area of Bray Road and Bowers Road. And, you know, the farmers, you know, my neighbor called me a month ago and said she has a stable. And she said, you know, one of my customers left at about 10 o'clock and the beast ran in front of her on Bowers Road. So it's just part of that area. So you just go ahead and farm the land, and you're going to have activity. Everybody in that area does. UFOs have landed very, you know, like within a quarter mile of my barn, and people have seen those. And so there've been many, many activities, but yeah, you have to proceed with the, you know, this particular three-dimensional world we live in, because I need to farm the land, but always aware of that other, those other dimensions that are out there.
And I was going to just interject, Lee, if you remember to farm, because sometimes when I've gone out there, I don't seem to. I have time loss when I go out there, and in fact, we both did that one night, and that's the scary vibe about it. Like I said, I give you, high ranks for going out there and doing what you do on that piece of land. Period.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. All right. Well. So in closing, gentlemen, and we'll start with, I want to start with Lee, as we move forward here as you put it, I think so eloquently, Lee, you just kind of put your head down and things are going to happen the way they happen. I mean, this is going to continue. This type of activity is going to continue. I think whether we're here or not, how do we keep Linda's legacy alive, and how do we keep some of these stories alive and keep this whole thing alive? How do you think we should remember Linda and keep her memory alive?
Well, I think Jay said it one of the best, and she was the hub, and we're all just spindles, because everything went through Linda that, people would contact her, and she was so generous with her time. So just overwhelmingly interested in each story. And she was so good, I guess, where to be vetting the story. She would go wherever she needed to go to talk to the people about their stories. And, she didn't belittle people. Mm-hmm. Some of my neighbors have been belittled. Some of my neighbors have seen it and will not talk about it because they feel they're going to be criticized and they're going to be made fun of. And Linda was just so good at okay, this is what you saw. Well, her one book, I love her. Well, I know what I saw. And she just approached it from that attitude that you saw it. Now let's investigate what you saw and where you saw it and things of that type.
Yeah.
And her legacy is what she wrote. I mean, her literary skills were excellent. Her video skills. And it lives through all of us. I mean, I would not be even close to the growth that I've had in the supernatural world without Linda. So she lives through us and through her literary talents and through her video, the videos she's made. And her impact on this field is overwhelming. Just one of the strongest of anybody I know of.
Absolutely. Sanjay, how do we keep Linda's legacy alive now that she's gone?
I think Lee's answer is absolutely spot on. Her books, her writings, her blog, all of the things that she wrote and published and shared are her legacy. They're her gift to us. And I think in terms of keeping that memory alive, I think at the end of the day, Linda Godfrey is the person who put the Dog Man on the map, or the Beast of Bray Road on the map. And she did it very carefully. I don't think she set out to become a paranormal investigator. She was a reporter, mm-hmm. But she did what she was given and ran with it. But did it very carefully, very diligently, with tremendous hard work, tremendous discipline, but also tremendous heart. I've talked to so many people who knew Linda or encountered her or spoke with her, and every single one of them has said, "What a nice lady. She listened to me. She didn't judge me. She wrote, she said, 'What did you see? What did you experience? What happened?'" And that's what she recorded. She reported. And I think the greatest gift that Linda gave us was herself. Mm-hmm. And I know, for my own life, I had a friend for 8 years who was kind and generous and warm and caring. And yes, she was absolutely in charge every single moment of it. But and you never forgot, when you were out with Linda, Linda was running the show. But you know what? That was okay. And she opened doors for me and introduced me. She introduced me to Jay. She introduced me to Lee, to so many other people, and just broadened those horizons and connected me with so many other people. And at the end of the day, that I think is what I'll remember, that Linda was an incredible friend.
Very good. Very good. So, Jay, I'm going to add one little twist to what Sanjay said there, because I'm a little interested in this now as well. Not only how do we keep Linda's legacy alive, but now who takes over that area of Wisconsin, the Kettle Moraine area, not just keeping the stories of Beast of Bray Road and the Bigfoot phenomenon, whatnot going on there, the supernatural phenomenon going there, but who hands down the legacies from here on out? Who takes over that role that Linda played in that area?
Well, number one, there could never be another Linda Godfrey ever. Hands down, from what Sanjay has said, what Lee has said, I really don't know how, for what I do, I'm still going to be focusing on hunting the truth. I'm hunting my truth. I'm hunting Jay's truth. And that's where I'm heading now. Some people will get a hold of me and tell me that there's an encounter. And if it's local, I do the same thing. I will go out and investigate it. But I don't have the literacy skills as Linda did. I have more of the, you know, let me document it. Let me put you on film. And I don't mean it for that reason, but to keep that part alive, because I always said, whatever we're doing in honor of Linda, to keeping that legacy alive, is to go out and find our truth, find other people and help document this for the researchers of tomorrow. I mean, let's be truthful. We're all not going to be here forever. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have some up and coming young ones that maybe aren't even born yet that are going to hear our voices one day of, you know, be able to carry on what Linda started.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of, and I think that's her legacy, is it going to be that trickle down effect of people going out searching for that truth, not just accepting it or, you know, you could read these great stories and great encounters, but there's nothing like driving down Bray Road or adjoining road, Bowers Road, and having something that you've only read about is there, you know?
Right.
And again, I believe that's what that would be. You know, it's, I'm going to miss Linda as not only my friend, but as my mentor, as somebody I'd always go to, especially when I had some difficult questions. As Sanjay said, she was a devout Lutheran, as well as me. I'm totally Bible-based. Jesus is my Lord and Savior, and there was definitely a connection there. But I am going to miss her, but I'm never, ever going to forget Linda, ever.
I think that's a good place to end it. I think, you know, I just want to add on top of that, it was truly a blessing to have Linda with us here on this show. The few times that we had her, I wish we would have had her more. You know, the wheel of life spins so quickly, and there's only so many slots in which to have people on the show. Linda was one of those treasured guests that would come on, would impart you with her knowledge. And the time went so quickly, and it went so quickly tonight. Gentlemen, I want to thank you, each one of you, for coming on and sharing your memories of Linda, and this hour and change went so quickly as well. So I want to thank you for imparting your stories, your knowledge, your experiences with Linda, Jay, Sanjay, and Lee. I want to thank you, the three of you, for spending this short time with us tonight.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. I truly enjoyed it. It was great to remember Linda and share our memories of her. Thank you.
And thank you, guys. Folks, that'll do it for another week here of Darkness Radio. First of all, I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Darkness Radio for yet another week. And I want to appreciate your you being with us here and just your patronage and being with us for so long. Again, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, telephone. No, wait, that isn't the thing. But tell somebody about this show if you enjoy it. Rate and review us on iTunes or on Spotify. If you love us, give us a 5-star review. Want to remind you again, darknessradioshow.com is the place to go. If you want to find out extra stuff about the show, there's up on the blog right now, believe it or not, Beer City Bruiser's dog, Ziggy Starpup, has given his NFL picks or her NFL picks. That's right. We're doing the psychic animal thing. So the NFL picks are up. We've got other things on there as well. Bob Dennis's Urban Legends Stranger Truths is up. The 5-minute microcast, the daily microcast is up. It's got its own tab there on the show website as well. The other day I had accidentally called it originaltruecrimetuesday.com. That's the other website. It's not. It's officialtruecrimetuesday.com. Officialtruecrimetuesday.com if you want to listen to the archives of True Crime Tuesday from when we were on Patreon from 2017 to 2020. It's all free. You can go listen to True Crime Tuesday over there as well. Also want to thank Microdose Gummies, our sponsor for this week. Again, if you go to microdose.com, check out that website. At checkout, you can get 30% off your first order and free shipping if you use the code DARKNESS at checkout. We encourage you to patronize that site as well and get yourself into a better shape for 2022 and 2023. Alleviate pain, alleviate anxiety, get better night's sleep, help yourself out with your workout. Go to microdose.com and take advantage of that special. Also, take care of yourself and take care of each other. Do that this weekend. If you have an extra 5 minutes or $5, one way or the other, if you see somebody in need, just reach out to somebody this weekend and do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. Take care of your fellow man. Life is so short, folks, and we need to do stuff to help ourselves on this planet because nobody's going to do it for us. If you see somebody in need, help that someone. Reach out to your fellow man and help them this weekend. Just reach out and give somebody a helping hand. It's coming. Actually, we're at winter. We're all freezing at this point of the year. People need coats. They need meals. They need clothing. Do something this weekend to help out somebody who may be in need. You don't need a holiday season to remind you of that. So go out and do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. For Beer City Bruiser, from Allie Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. Join us again next week for more of the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.